Every 2 minutes, someone in the U.S. is sexually assaulted. This hour, rape prevention, the attitudes and opinions that need to change to make Iowa safer. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. My guest this hour, Carla Miller, Executive Director of the Rape Victim Advocacy Program at the University of Iowa. Jonna Williams of Waterloo is also with us. When Jonna was 13, she was kidnapped and sexually assaulted. She's now a victim's advocate. And we'll hear from Peter Cahill, the creator of a new smartphone app which aims to prevent kidnappings and assaults. What can be done to prevent sexual assault? After this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Every 2 minutes, it's estimated someone in the U.S. is sexually assaulted. This hour, we want to talk about rape prevention. It's been in the news, not only here in the U.S., but we've been hearing about it around the world. 5 men in Delhi, India, have been formally charged with the abduction, gang rape, and murder of a 23-year-old woman. It's a case that has shocked India and prompted a debate about the treatment of women there. Here in the U.S., well, remember the last election campaign, several instances there when rape became part of the conversation, that whole controversy over then-Missouri Congressman Todd Akin's use of the term legitimate rape. And more recently, perhaps it got lost in all the talk about the fiscal cliff and other politics on Capitol Hill. But since it was passed into law in 1994, the Violence Against Women Act, it's provided life-saving assistance to millions of women and families across the country. The Congress that just came to a close, the 112th, failed to reauthorize that act. So this hour, we want to talk about the attitudes we need to prevent sexual assault, the opinions that need to change to make Iowa safer in these terms. Joining us, first of all, to talk about this for the entire hour, Carla Miller is with us, Executive Director of the Rape Victim Advocacy Program at the University of Iowa. Welcome back to our program, Carla.
Thank you.
Let's talk, first of all, about this act, the Violence Against Women Act. It came to a close, failed to be reauthorized. It's been the law since 1994. Tell me, first of all, before we talk about why you think, your understanding of why it failed in this Congress, what it has done since 1994.
Well, I think three of the major issues are whether or not immigrants, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people, and Native Americans will be covered by this act.
Okay, so now we're talking about why it failed.
Right.
I guess back up so that we have a better understanding of what this act does, has done over the past decades.
Sure.
Before we get to this latest instance.
Sure. This act was created to be able to provide services to victims of crimes. Specifically for RVAP and for DVIP, it covers services to victims of sexual assault and domestic violence. It makes up a considerable amount of our budget, about 60% of our budget. It comes from federal funding. We also get state funding. One of the things that we're facing right now is that there have been major cuts in victim services over the years from this particular act. Mm-hmm. And what's happened is that we're going to be regionalized. Instead of having 28 centers, we're going to greatly be reduced to cover many more counties.
What impact do you think that will have on communities? Can you be just, with those monies, those reduced monies, be just as efficient at serving victims?
Well, for our region, for example, we're looking at, instead of covering 4 counties, we'd be covering 14. You know, I think when we look at it, the idea is that that we'll have advocates, you know, in areas that are outlying, but it's going to make it much more difficult. I mean, that's just an understood thing. I think that there will be less services, obviously, that we can do. But not for lack of trying to reach those areas, but practically speaking, when you have fewer shelters, when you have fewer sexual assault centers, it's gonna greatly impact victims.
Give me an idea of how much their demand there is. How many victims get in touch with the Rape Victim Advocacy Program? And in Iowa, if you could sort of expand on that.
Sure.
How about the need?
We get about 1,000 calls at RVAP on the crisis line each year. Last year, of those, we had 236 rapes reported to us. So we also have attempted rapes, people who have been victims of incest, lots of different types of calls. So it's a significant amount, number of calls, and other centers experience, a high level. We know that only about 1 out of 10 victims report to anybody. So it's a greatly underrepresentative number, the ones that we get. But we get a significant amount.
So 60% of your budget at RVAP, depending on the Violence Against Women Act, that has failed to be reauthorized, though I do think Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi has said it will be, I think in her words, a leading priority in the 113th Congress, which has just convened as of late last week. What is your understanding, Carla Miller, of why this act failed to be reauthorized?
As I mentioned earlier, I think there are some issues that have been raised about who to cover, who's going to be a victim who has access to services, who has access to compassionate and extensive services.
There was the act as it was written by the Senate, if I'm correct.
I believe this was in the House.
But the Senate was trying to expand the coverage or be more precise about its language, and that didn't pass muster in the House, match the House?
Well, I think the issue is the inclusion, and I think one of the issues was expanding Native American jurisprudence from what they usually cover. I'm not sure, I don't have that great of an understanding of that particular issue. But what I do know is that those have been the sticking points. I think if you mentioned earlier that there are some arguments that have been made, and certainly rape was politicized in the election. We heard different things like the gift from God rape explanation.
Was that the Senate candidate Richard Murdoch? I think was the one did not make an exception for abortion in the case of rape.
And I think you're absolutely right. And it was when life begins with that horrible situation of rape, that is something that God intended to happen. I think when we looked at legitimate rape, the legitimate rape argument, which was the female body has ways to try and shut that whole thing down. That was from
Todd Akin, then Missouri congressman. Let's make sure we understand or give us as close as you can a definition of rape, since it seems to be defined differently by different people in politics and otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, if you just look to most states' codes, it's any act of a sexual nature that's done against the will or by force. And, I think when you look at the majority of sexual assaults, they are committed by somebody that the victim knows. They very often are through coercion and manipulation. And until the FBI changed their definition for the Uniform Crime Report, they only counted what were called forcible rapes, where there was evidence of overt violence. That has been changed because there is recognition that cuts out the majority of rapes that occur.
Mm-hmm. Joining us this hour, Carla Miller, Executive Director of the Rape Victim Advocacy Program at the University of Iowa, talking about rape prevention, sexual assault prevention this hour. If you want to join our conversation, perhaps you've been the victim of an attempted assault, attempted rape. What sorts of things do you do now to ensure your personal safety? 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Joining us now in our Cedar Falls studio, Jonna Williams is with us. Jonna, welcome to our program.
Good to be back, Ben. Thank you.
Jonna's been on our program, as you mentioned there, Jonna. In addition to your career as a social worker, you are a victim's of sexual assault advocate. You are also a survivor of sexual assault yourself, as you described on this program some months ago. You were kidnapped, sexually assaulted at the age of 13 in 1994, and that perpetrator is now serving time in the Iowa State Penitentiary. You've been listening in. What is your comment right now, perhaps a comment about the Violence Against Women Act or about how we've been throwing around this term rape in politics and otherwise?
You know, it's shocking. It's really shocking, and change has to start at the top. I mean, I have a list here of eight different political figures who are talking about rape, having clearly not been touched by it. So it's shocking. You know, also with the Violence Against Women Act, the Republicans did not want to include the gay community, the gay and lesbian community, tribal members, or illegal immigrants in that. And the Democrats actually introduced it with that expansion of coverage, and so it didn't pass, as you mentioned earlier. But definitely, I'm shocked. You know, there's a lot of people out there who don't really take politicians very seriously, but there are a lot of people who do and who hang on every word they say. And a lot of people are hearing what these men are saying. It's very frustrating.
Mm-hmm. As someone who is a survivor, who has been a victim of sexual assault, can you tell us something that most people who have not, unfortunately have not had that experience, don't seem to get? Misconceptions that perhaps are reflected in the quotes that you're referring to or comments that you run into quite frequently?
You know, a lot of misconceptions are that, you know, for me personally, that I was out late at night, that I was dressed provocatively, that I didn't know stranger danger. All those things in my personal experience are very inaccurate. You know, I was kidnapped from a street in Waterloo that in the middle of the afternoon. So, and I was certainly not dressed provocatively, and I did practice stranger danger. So, from my personal experience, there's a lot of misconceptions. Also, just the misconception that that it's easy, and that there are a lot of women who cry rape. To be honest, I have had more women say to me, you know, I was assaulted, I was raped, after hearing my story, and mm-hmm. I've never had one say, well, I don't know, or I'm not really sure if I was assaulted. I've never heard that from a woman.
Mm-hmm. So when Carla Miller quotes the statistic that one out of 10 are the ones who seek help, perhaps call the hotline, get in touch with the Rape Victims Advocacy Program, that tallies with your experiences, your conversations with women. Most of these women do not come forward.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, looking at what a lifetime of hardship that I would face, if I knew then what I know now, would I have told someone? Probably not. Probably not. And that's hard for me to say, but it's true. Had I known all of the things that I would have to go through just to make sure that my offender went to jail, that I got the proper services, that I healed enough to turn into a productive member of society, I probably would not have told anyone.
Carla Miller, when we hear Jonna Williams talk about dressing provocatively or doing that's been constantly in our news here, victim blaming. Can you give us some examples that you see of victim blaming that perhaps you see as way over the line?
Actually, any of them that are victim blaming are way over the line. And you know, when we talk about rape prevention, we're not looking at women ever being able to stop rape. Because it's not their behavior to stop. Society can stop it. Women can reduce their risk. But it is a very, very common way for perpetrators to avoid being held accountable. And as a society, we add to that. We support them. We let them get away with things. We let them skate. You know, we look at India, the situation in India, and we say, oh, man, that's bad and all that. We had 22 what's called gang rapes or multiple perpetrator rapes reported to us in FY12. Now, the same types of injuries our advocates have dealt with.
To your organization?
That's right.
To your organization, which covers what part of Iowa?
We cover a four-county area, and then we also have the Iowa Sexual Abuse Hotline that is a statewide hotline. And, you know, so when we look at situations, for example, a girl in a small town being labeled as loose, what usually is happening is that she's gang raped by a group. And a lot of times it's athletes. And then she's labeled loose, blamed for it, made to be, you know, there's an assassination of her character, making her seem oversexed, whatever, which then sets her up for further victimization. So, you know, some of it is that we refuse as a society to accept what's going on. We'd rather, once we know who the perpetrator is, we would rather figure out ways that it's the victim's fault. And until we change that, there's not going to be significant change.
Some highly disturbing cases. The one I'm sure you're aware of in Steubenville, Ohio, both of you, Carla and Jonna, the rape of a Steubenville, Ohio high school student. After becoming unconscious at a party in late August of last year, the 16-year-old girl was allegedly raped, sexually assaulted, and then urinated on by members of the Steubenville High School football team. That was the allegation there. Twitter posts, as well as videos and photographs about the rape, circulated on social media sites like Instagram and YouTube. Wow. What can we learn from this story? Jonna Williams.
What kind of homes are these children raised in? When was that ever okay?
Right. What is the mindset? Can you describe at all the mindset that would do such a horrendous act, Carla Miller?
I think a lot of times, you know, if you look at perpetrators, there are different motivations. Primary motivations, although there are multiple ones. And the one that you generally see in that kind of situation is one of entitlement, that being above the law, being able to do whatever they want and get away with it. And they do. And so and very often they'll have people who are supporting them who not only don't hold them accountable, but in fact, in essence, say, there is either boys will be boys or, you know, that it was something that the victim did.
Mm-hmm. We hear the theory again and again that the rape isn't necessarily about sex, but rather about controlling someone, controlling a woman's life. To what degree is that true? Jonna Williams, can I give you that one?
I think that's absolutely true. Absolutely. Reading about offenders and offenders' accounts who have admitted their guilt, they're not saying, I was a sex addict. They're not saying that. It comes down to bad decision-making, a lot of bad things happening in their own lives that have led them to this behavior. Although that's not excusable, it's absolutely about power.
Mm-hmm. Here's another case that we had in the news, and I don't know the degree to which this has anything to do with the culture that surrounds the problem we're talking about today. So let me just preface it by saying that. Recently, a high-profile case at the Iowa Supreme Court made national news. A dentist acted legally, according to the Iowa Supreme Court, when he fired an assistant that he found attractive because he and his wife viewed the woman as a threat to their marriage. Our Supreme Court, all male, 7-0, ruled that the bosses can fire employees they see as, quote, irresistible attraction. Even if the employees have not engaged in flirtatious behavior or otherwise done anything wrong, Justice Edward Mansfield wrote, such firings may be unfair, but they are not unlawful discrimination under the Iowa Civil Rights Act because they are motivated by feelings and emotions, not by gender. I'd like to get your take on that, Carla Miller.
Quite frankly, that makes me weak. I think that's exactly a wonderful example of how perpetrators and anybody who has attitudes in that way are given the go-ahead. Now, they're making a distinction between what is legal, mm-hmm, and what is fair or just or whatever. And in that case, I think...
So you do understand the narrow ruling that they gave here.
I understand it. I understand we need changes in the law that don't make that distinction about that, because those attitudes, those behaviors are harassing, and someone by virtue of working at a job should not be fired on that basis, and I would see that as naturally falling under harassment and falling under the gender discrimination. Now,
Jonna Williams, does this man not have the right to do what I suppose the only option he thought was to protect his marriage as he saw that by firing her?
Absolutely not. As long as I can remember, something really important that my parents taught me is you are only responsible for your actions. I can only be responsible for my actions. And it sounds as if the assistant acted appropriately. If the man couldn't control himself, he clearly needs some intervention. But, you know, that was shocking. That was shocking to hear.
Mm-hmm. How do we teach? How do we change our culture? We'll get into this in our second half hour, too. Also, we'll talk about one at least high-tech solution that you're involved with, Jonna Williams. But on the larger societal scale, what do you see as the core things that need to change in people's thinking?
You know... A lot of it needs to start at the top. It needs to start with our politicians, with our teachers, with any kind of public figures. It needs to start with our entertainment industry, with our law enforcement officers, with our judges. It needs to start at the top. And the attitudes have got to change. And, you know, I think there's a lot of lack of understanding of what the impact is, of the actions that some of our young men are taking these days. So I always tell people, know your impact. Know the impact that everything you do and say has on someone else. I think there's a lot of folks out there that don't know their impact and that aren't thinking about what they're doing.
About a minute before our break, Carla Miller, follow up on that. Expand on that.
Well, I totally agree. And I think we have to look at who is being served by those attitudes. We spoke to over 5,000 people last year about rape prevention, about it, you know, education about sexual assault. I think just to look at that, it's not an education issue for a lot of people. There are competing interests. There are money interests. There are power interests that...
When you say not just an education issue, do you mean what? That there are things tugging people this way and that?
That's right.
When Jonna mentions our media, you may have some rape prevention education going on, but at the same time, if people are always watching this on TV, it may undo that?
Well, I'm saying that, for example, that we don't hold an offender accountable by virtue of his identity or what he does in society. I think that, you know, and what a valuable person they are, and so we're going to sacrifice a victim.
We'll be back in just a moment. More from Carla Miller, Executive Director of the Rape Victim Advocacy Program at the University of Iowa. Jonna Williams is with us as well of Waterloo. She was kidnapped and sexually assaulted at the age of 13. Now she's a victim's advocate. We'd like to have you join our discussion. Have you ever been a victim of an assault or an attempted assault? Let us know. Share your story. What would make our society safer? 1-866-70-80-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. In just a moment, the creator of a new smartphone app which aims to prevent kidnappings and assaults. In just a moment. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, we'll speak with immigrants from around the state about their experiences moving to Iowa, the cultural changes they've experienced, as well as what it's like to work and live in Iowa's communities as new immigrants. That's tomorrow on this program, tomorrow Tuesday. Today, we're talking about sexual assault prevention. Every 2 minutes, it's estimated someone in the United States is sexually assaulted. Each year, more than 200,000 victims, 12 or older, are assaulted each year. Carla Miller is with us, Executive Director of the Rape Victim Advocacy Program at the University of Iowa. Jonna Williams, a survivor of a sexual assault, with us as well in our Cedar Falls studio. Now she's a victim's advocate, giving her voice to our conversation as well. And we invite you to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us now by phone, Peter Cahill is with us. He is the creator of a new smartphone application, a smartphone app which aims to prevent kidnappings and assaults. Peter Cahill, welcome to our program.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon. Peter Cahill, tell us, how does this app, which I understand is called Lifeline Response, work?
Generally, Ben, it is an application that everybody's kind of taken a kind of a passive approach, and we're taking more of a everybody's been very reactionary to sexual assaults and abductions, and we're trying to take a proactive, so we're trying to actually prevent the attack from ever happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the assault.
Okay,
and
so explain in nuts and bolts. I have
sure.
My smartphone, I have my iPhone. What does this app do? How does it exactly work?
Sure. So Susie's walking home from class. She's just stepped outside. She decides to press Lifeline Response. She puts her thumb or finger anywhere on the touchpad. If Susie's attacked, what's going to happen to her thumb?
Well, she could drop it. She could put it in her purse. Her thumb would probably go off of that touchpad, I assume.
That's exactly right. And instantaneously, within a tenth of a millisecond, the information from her phone, the smallest packet of data is sent to our servers. And our servers are capturing that information. So the assaulter, the attacker, can go ahead and destroy the phone. At that point, it doesn't make a difference. Because as soon as contact is broken, we have that person's information. We have their geolocation, what they look like, how tall they are, what their birth date is, and their specific location down to about roughly, we can get down to about 4 feet of within the location of where the person is.
What happens if the person just inadvertently forgets and takes their finger off the touchpad?
Yeah, great question. We basically are down to less than a 0.002% of false alarms. So, and the reason we do that, we built in certain algorithms into the phone. So if Susie gets to her car and she's fine, she lifts her thumb off, mm-hmm. and there's a 20-second countdown that begins. And at that point, she enters her disarm code. She enters her disarm code, the servers are contacted, stop the alert system.
Okay, so her thumb comes off, the system is triggered, the countdown goes, and then the person enters a code, and everything's fine. So
yes.
In what cases would you recommend this product be used?
It's pretty versatile. We have two modes. There's the thumb mode, and that's a natural response system, so you don't have to do anything. So several people, there's a lot of gimmicks out there, and I caution people because there's a lot of apps out there that don't do what they promise to do, nor are they any type of natural response system. You need to be proactive in the protection of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
go ahead.
So 1 in 4 women are attempted attack in the United States, and that's not even including the statistics that surround men. Go ahead. So if somebody can actually stop themselves, if somebody can go ahead and proactively alert their system, enter the code, disarm the app if they need to. If not, the system kind of takes care of itself. If somebody's walking in a garage late at night, if somebody's walking through the park, if somebody's leaving campus, if somebody's walking to and from school, there's a couple modes. Online dating is tremendously popular at this point. And people just can assume to be anyone they want. They can put pictures up of anyone. So if you're going to go on a first date, you obviously don't want to hold your thumb the entire time you're on a date, right? So we've put in...
You shouldn't be on on that date if you do have to do that.
Yeah. I think one of our counterparts, April Rose, has said, you just can't do that the entire time. So what we did is we put in a timer mode. So you go on a blind date, you go on a first meeting of someone new, you set it for 30 minutes. If you feel fine at the end of the 30 minutes, you disarm it and you're good to go. Mm. There's nothing, and the person doesn't have to be noticed that it's on. It's not an evasive application.
Okay. Let me talk to Jonna about it and understand. Jonna, describe your involvement with this phone app, because you have been involved with Peter Cahill.
I have. I've been advocating this application just in the local area with the Waterloo Community Schools, and just trying to get people involved and get people to use it and to think about it, because I can't think of how many times I could have used this, or I should have used this, or friends that should have it, and family. I mean, there's nothing else like it on the market that can contact authorities right away.
Have you tried it out yourself, Jonna?
I have. Yep. I have it on my phone. And, I mean, the funniest times I can use it are, you know, I thought about this the other day. I trail ride with a horse. I have a horse. So I'm out. I'm trail riding on my own. And I can put it in my pocket if an animal accosts me, which does happen, or a person if I get in an accident. I've been approached by people while on my horse, and you know, I can use it then. So,
okay, so obviously riding a horse, your thumb's not going to be on your smartphone the whole time. So you're riding your horse, you see something happening that worries you, you pull it out and you put your finger on the trigger, so to speak.
Either that, or I set it on a timer mode.
Okay.
I mean, I'm riding out in the middle of nowhere, so there's gravel roads, there's not a lot of people around, there's hunters, and you just never know what you're going to come across. But also I use it, you know, taking my dog for a walk, jogging, biking. And the other important thing to remember is that when I was kidnapped, it was the middle of the daytime. When our Evansdale girls were abducted, this was, again, the middle of the daytime. Denisha Hill, in the middle of the daytime. Not just in situations that are concerning, like at night in a dark parking lot in an alley, but in regular everyday situations.
This application that we're talking about, Lifeline Response, costs $21.99. I see in my notes, but mm-hmm. First, that's a lot. That's a lot for an app if we compare it to other apps. Why the cost there, Peter?
I love the question. If it breaks down to 6 cents a day, and we think your safety is worth 6 cents a day. We have decided to take an approach where we're the loss leader in the education field. We don't care. We want to save and prevent these situations from happening. I hate to do it, but if you bring up Penn State, 16 unsolved rapes since the beginning of school. Mm-hmm. 16. A school that has been just devastated by, plagued with controversy around sexual assaults. Notre Dame. You saw what happened. There's a lot of controversy around the two players that are playing. The girl from Barrington, a very wealthy town outside of Chicago, raped, allegedly, so basically accosted by the university and by the students, and put in a situation where she ultimately committed suicide. The results of this, folks, I can't, for somebody who's been in it, Carla and Jonna, for so long, It honestly offends me, the anger that should come with this. I mean, we have to get angry about this, and it's okay to get angry about it as long as we have smart solutions, and I think we do.
Peter Cahill is the creator of a new smartphone application which aims to prevent kidnappings and assaults. Peter Cahill, I have to ask about how you became so passionate about preventing assault. Has this touched you or your family?
Assault has definitely touched my family, and as of last January— the same town in Barrington, Illinois, which is, again, I bring this up because it can happen anywhere. It's any socioeconomic path. And so there fundamentally needs to be a paradigm shift. And a paradigm shift is a change in basic assumptions. It exists everywhere. So my niece was walking home from school in Barrington, Illinois, and she was an attempted abduction. If it can happen in a town like Barrington, Illinois, or off Main Street, or a little girl walking home from getting ice cream on Sunday afternoon and assaulted under a bridge, it can happen anywhere, literally anywhere. And everybody's, you know, I think the definition of epidemic is, and I don't have it in front of me, but it's a widespread infectious disease in a community. How much more can you look at 1 in 4 women and 1 in 15 men that are attempted rape victims in the United States and not call it an epidemic?
Peter Cahill, the creator of a new smartphone app which aims to prevent kidnappings and assaults. We want to go to the phones here in just a moment, but Carla Miller, I want you to weigh in on this smartphone app. You have been in the area of sexual assault prevention for many decades. What is your view of it?
I think there's different issues with it. Certainly individuals can take different steps, whatever they feel comfortable with, in reducing their risk. And this sounds like one of those tools that someone might choose to keep themselves safer. You were talking about the having your thumb on the on there, and then when it comes off, they call that a dead man switch. And I
agree. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting feature. I think too. It's like there are the coasters that were put out. There are lots of products, some of them better than others. And as I say, when you think about it in terms of what can I, as an individual, do and use to reduce my risk, I think it's good to have a number of things that you can choose from. Having said that, I think, too, that the premise, Peter was saying, it's outrageous that we have to arm ourselves with various things to protect ourselves. I wanted to see somebody develop something for perpetrators that they carry, that they, whatever.
What would you imagine?
Well,
that alerts us to the fact that they're perpetrators.
Well, no, that kind of reminds them in some cases. I think now more than ever, if any of these cases that we're just hearing about, and I hope we continue on social media and through the regular media to hear about, if there's anything about that, I want perpetrators to know that they are more likely than ever to be held accountable.
Can I chime in here on that?
Yeah, quickly. We want to go to phones, but Peter Cahill, please go ahead.
Sure. I couldn't agree with you more, Carla, but you're breaking some civil liberties there, right? So we don't have to break the civil liberties to protect ourselves, in my opinion. And if with the advent of social media, without naming names, because I don't necessarily need them coming after me, the advent of social media has called an increase in these types of crimes. Because if I'm friends with Carla and I think her niece is cute, I can ask her on a date. And I can ask you, guess what? I also know where she is. But Carla doesn't know me that well. That's the advent of social media. Privacy has gone away. And now some people like it. Some people don't. Some people can choose not to use it. Some people can. It's for everyone's edification, while crime has gone down, the level of crime or the violent crime statistics have gone up, and everybody needs to be aware of that because the government reports statistically that crime rates have gone down, but the level and the type of crimes, violent crimes and aggravated assaults and forced sexual assaults have gone up. And you can look at those in the Cleary reports that every college is mandated to report at the end of each year.
Okay. If anyone wants to get in, jump in right now. Otherwise, I'm going to go to the phones. Let's go to the phones with Janet in Iowa City. Hi, Janet.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I really appreciate you doing a show on this. I'm an incest survivor, and I just wanted to suggest that the emphasis of the show needs to focus more on the majority of the crimes that are taking place, sexual crimes against women, which are by people that the victims know. Mm-hmm. They're not these random attacks on the street. And by focusing on these kind of random attacks on the street, we move further away from being able to solve the problem because we make it seem as though sexual perpetrators are some kind of crazy people instead of what they are, which is ingrained members of the society who in most cases are respected members of the community.
Great point.
So we're never going to solve this problem by just focusing on women being forced to protect themselves or these random street attacks.
Okay, Janet, great point. Jonna Williams on our program today was indeed attacked by a stranger. Jonna, were you not?
I was. And Ben, I spent a lot of time thinking about this. With this application, I've thought about incest survivors and survivors of or children who are at risk in situations where they know someone who is molesting them. Put this application on their phone. They don't have to say a word. They go to someone's house that is molesting them. And this is terrible to even have to consider this. But they set the timer mode on their phone. They never have to say a word, and the police will show up and help them. And they can say to a safe police officer, I've been molested by this person. This application is useful everywhere, but absolutely, we need to focus on all aspects of this and continue to change minds. But it's shows like this and applications like this that continue to raise awareness. And can I say something about the cost just for a moment?
Yes, quickly. We're running out of time,
sure.
But please do.
You know, as a survivor of sexual assault, my family and I have incurred hundreds of thousands of dollars in financial hardship from surviving sexual assault. So $21 a year to me is absolutely nothing. If you have ever survived something like this, you know the medical bills alone are fairly outrageous. And sometimes there's help for those, sometimes there's not.
Okay. Janet raised the point about the vast majority of these type of assaults being people that the victim knows, the survivor knows. Carla Miller, you know that. Are we perhaps distracting ourselves to some degree by talking about the stranger danger?
I don't think we're distracting ourselves. Certainly those occur. I think to not focus on the 85% that involves somebody that the victim knows and often trusts, regardless of age, but certainly children who are the most vulnerable in lots of ways. I think that it's very important if we're going to get to the root of the problem. I think you have to consider both. I don't think it's an either or.
Mm-hmm. How does Peter Cahill, how has law enforcement reacted to this new smartphone app Lifeline Response? What are their reservations?
We have endorsements from one of the largest universities in the United States, San Angelo / Texas Tech, from Chief James Adams. He is one of the early adopters at the university, and we have just started deploying. As you know, we're only 8 weeks old. With the new year, the advent of 2013, our deployment of colleges start now.
And I understand you're making Lifeline Response free to students in the Evansdale area?
You know what? The emotion that happened to me, Jonah is amazing. I'll say that on air. She's absolutely amazing. And what she survived, I don't think people realize, whether it's be incest, and I appreciate the call from the caller. I think that was a really responsible question. I don't have the answers for everything. That's what I can say. Mm-hmm. I'm working on it.
Explain more about what's going on in the Evansdale area, though, Peter.
Sure. We are going to make a donation worth $250,000 to the Evansdale community and Lifeline apps. Basically, $21.99. We roughed it about 9,500 people. We wanted to make Jonah. It was an advocate for the area, saying the area has been just absolutely devastated. I read an article recently about our girls. It's touched everybody in that community.
Okay, we're running out of time. Peter Cahill, $250,000. I interpret that as in the form of free applications, right?
Yes.
Okay, Carla Miller wants to jump in here.
And, you know, with all due respect, I don't think that women should have to pay for a monthly fee for being safe. And I understand that it's a business and you need to be able to do that. But I do take issue with that in terms of, having to really arm ourselves.
I agree.
So what is, Carla Miller, the bigger conversation to wrap up our hour that needs to happen about assault and abduction here in our society to make it safer?
Well, I think there's several things that we can do. And one of the problems is that when you're overwhelmed with these cases, it feels like we're helpless. But we're not. I mean, there are many, many people who don't blame victims out there. We need to hear from them. We need people on boards. We need them to vote for politicians who are aware about sexual assault and domestic violence and the issues, and we need people like that to run for office. We need to have people getting on, as I mentioned, on boards. We also need to look at people from kindergarten through higher education, and people who believe strongly that everyone should be able to learn and work in safe environments, to get involved and speak up and call people on inappropriate behavior. We need to confront apologists who say boys will be boys. And we can do that. You know, we looked at years ago, we looked at the idea of having an impact on the level of smoking in our society. We can do it if we have the collective will. We can make a huge change. And, you know, that we're still doing Rape 101 myths and facts is not an education issue except, in, you know, and for people who haven't heard it before. We can do this.
Did you get the feeling, very quickly before we go, Carla Miller, did you get the feeling, especially in the last couple of years, that sometimes we take one step forward and two steps back?
I think there is a backlash, and I think that we are seeing a loss of progress that we had. And, for example, in victim services, seeing those cut back at amazing levels, and they'll continue to be cut back. It will, you know, not for lack of us trying. So I think that we have to make this a priority and say we're not going to sacrifice anybody.
Carla Miller is the executive director of the Rape Victim Advocacy Program at the University of Iowa. Jonna Williams in our Cedar Falls studio, victims advocate. Thank you for coming into our studio, Jonna and Carla. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to Peter Cahill, the creator of a new smartphone app aims to prevent kidnappings and assaults called Lifeline Response. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan, and in Cedar Falls, help from Tony Daner. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.